right-sider net, and that scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flame.
Here it is, put it in the wind column!
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get this hour going. It is Wednesday, July 10th. And we're underway on another hour of Flames Talk. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. When it comes to your business, knowing your property is secure is better than wondering who's getting in. Get peace of mind at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Well, Wes, first of all, hello. Happy Stampede Wednesday.
Yeah, same to you, buddy.
It is July 10th, which means by my crack math, we are 9 days into 2024 free agency.
That's pretty good. Did you do that without your calculator?
Well, I had to double check it.
Yeah, it's never a bad idea.
And 9 days in, Oliver Shillington remains unsigned. Not by the Flames, not by anywhere else. He remains an unrestricted free agent, which I don't know if that's a big story league-wide, but certainly in this market, it's turned into a really interesting story.
Which begs the question,
what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
What has transpired? Why are we 9 days in to free agency and Shillington has no contract here or elsewhere? And the question that I ask has, even louder. Go ahead, yeah.
Can I interject for a second?
Of course.
Has there even been a rumor about another team showing interest? Have we heard anything?
Not since July 1.
Yeah, okay.
So my follow-up question is this. Did the Shillington camp misread the market as poorly as they have? And I'm not, like, on the surface, the answer seems obviously yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is as, if it's as resoundingly yes as perhaps it looks like on the surface. But here's kind of what I understand as to how we've gotten to this point. So, obviously, we know what happened the last 2 years with Oliver. We know how the Flames handled the situation. We know how feel-good a story it was with Oliver coming back in January and all of that. As we moved closer to free agency and they remained far apart in the deal, it became one of those things where, like, okay, how do they find a middle ground on this thing? Because and one of the things that was always important in the conversation was the whole idea that the cap's going up and Oliver is becoming an unrestricted free agent for the first time. And there's always this balance to strike as to getting your client what you believe he's deserved, but also showing the gratitude that the Shillington camp had towards the Flames for how everything was handled over the last couple of years. And I don't like using the word handled. It seems too kind of mechanical or without feeling, right?
Like, yeah. Support is the best word,
support,
right?
Yeah, the way they supported him through a really difficult time.
Oliver has always put it in my discussions with him, and obviously these are all preceding free agency, but Oliver has always put it to me as I want to repay the love that the organization and the fans showed me. Now, that was months ago, and I know lots of people are screaming, saying, well, why hasn't he signed then? But that was always the way he phrased it.
So the feel that I got when I was down in Vegas for draft week, the feel that I got was that the Shillington camp believed that they had a deal in place or that they had a contract that they felt they were going to land in free agency. JP Barrie is one of the biggest name agents in the game, and he was negotiating this deal for Oliver. And so my belief was the Shillington camp believed that they had a deal, a multi-year deal. I believe they thought they had a four-year deal in place. And I know that that's like, oh, tampering, all that type of stuff. It is what it is. Everybody does it. Everybody has deals in place. You don't.
That's why they all get done in the first 10 minutes of free agency.
Frank Saravalli had 900 drafts ready to go and just started hitting them after that. He was like, okay, Frank doesn't type this fast. he had everything ready to go. It's the way it is, right? And whether we like it or not, that's how the business works. At some point, whether it be after free agency hit on July 1st or leading up to it, at some point that deal fell through. And that deal, the four-year deal that the Shillington camp believed they had in place, from my understanding, I believe it was 4 years, was whether they landed somebody they didn't expect they were going to land in free agency, or they landed somebody via trade, something happened, fell through, and now all of a sudden the deal that they were leveraging the Flames with didn't exist anymore, and here we are. And so I think at some point in this process, some feelings got jilted, and at some point in this process, there became a little bit of frustration, potentially bad blood, and now here we are. The Flames had their offer on the table, and I think that the message to the Shillington camp, when the Shillington camp said, "We believe we have this offer in place, can you match it?" was, "This is our offer. We feel this is a fair, competitive offer, and based on the circumstances, this is what we're comfortable putting on the table for Oliver. We love him. We want to come back. We believe this is fair, and that this is our offer. You're welcome to go see what you get in free agency, and we wish you the best." Then it doesn't happen, and now we find ourselves in a really interesting spot. And I, whether this is fair or not, I wonder whether the Flames' approach kind of ruffled feathers on the other side. Well, why aren't they matching? This is more speculation now.
Sure. There's some hurt feelings here.
There's definitely some frustration.
Yeah.
And some butting of heads, hurt feelings, tiltedness, whatever the case may be. And now here we are 9 days in, and every passing day, the less likely it is that a reunion comes in place. So that's my understanding as to how we've gotten to this point. And so do I think that the Shillington camp misread the market as poorly as they did? Maybe not as much as it looks like on the surface, yet something that they had in place, I believe, fell through, and now we are where we are.
Yeah, and so for starters, credit where it's due. I hadn't heard about the four-year deal before. I'm not sure anyone has heard about that, so that's really good intel for you. Credit where it's due. This is an awkward comparison, but I was having a conversation with someone earlier today about the Steve Stamkos situation and how it was sort of, well, there's no chance, there's no way he's leaving Tampa. And then suddenly it's like, oh, this stalemate is still going.
Yep.
You know, oh, geez, it seems like something has sort of, there's been a little bit of a malfunction there, and the hurt feelings that we talk about, you know, both sides are sort of dug in, and it slowly turned from, I just can't possibly imagine Steve Stamkos leaving Tampa, to, oh, geez, Steve Stamkos just signed with the Nashville Predators.
Yeah.
And I think while Oliver Shillington certainly doesn't have the same amount of games played in Calgary, hasn't been with the organization as long as Steve Stamkos had in Tampa, had sort of a similar feel. Like, all my conversations with Oliver, and you know, I remember him back in the winter telling me, yeah, this team knows where my loyalty is. Like, he was kind of saying, I don't think people should worry about the contract. And then as it got further and further, I kind of got the same feeling. Like, it went from, how does this not get done, to, geez, if it's not done by now, how dug in are the two sides? How substantially hurt are the feelings? How much has the frustration on either side sort of led to a feeling of, okay, fine then, you know, we're going to go our separate ways? And while I keep wondering if we will see an Oliver Shillington reunion here, I don't understand why it's not done yet.
Yeah.
I can understand why the Calgary Flames weren't willing to go 4 years. You know, we have cheered Oliver's return to hockey on this station and this podcast over and over and over. I was sort of struck at exit interviews by both Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska telling us, and I remember Ryan Huska telling us he just gave Oliver a big hug at the end of the season because he was so proud of him for coming back. But I was struck by them both talking about asking Oliver if he wanted to continue playing hockey. And that can help explain why an organization is maybe hesitant to go to a midterm contract, like 4 years. And I think both things can be true. They've been super supportive of Oliver, and yet they have to, you know, decide, well, what sort of commitment are we willing to make? They landed on 1 or 2 years that they were offering.
Yeah.
And so I understand where that's coming from. I just don't know where it goes from here. I don't know if there's a potential for the Shillington camp to circle back and say, hey, if that deal is still on the table, we'd be interested.
Yeah. And I honestly don't know if that deal still is on the table. I really don't.
I mean, at this point, buddy, we could be talking about Oliver Shillington not playing in the National Hockey League next season. I don't think that's far-fetched 10 days into free agency to look around and say, I mean, is this a player who might consider a season in Sweden before he'd consider a PTO? Is that a guy with his skill set? Are we really talking about a PTO? I don't think we should be, but yet it's July 10th. If we were going through depth charts, there wouldn't be a whole lot of teams that had an obvious opening on their blue line.
I don't really... there's no right or wrong. I don't think there's anybody in the wrong. I definitely take no umbrage with the way the Flames have handled this at all. I mean, again, I think the way the Flames have handled this, I don't know what their offer was, but I know that they believed they had a fair offer on the table to Oliver, and his group felt like there was something else out there.
Mm-hmm.
But from everything I understand, it was a competitive offer. It's not like they were lowballing him or anything like that, or trying to take advantage of the situation. So I have no problem with the way the Flames have handled this at all, because for the way this is, the way things have played out.
Yeah,
you don't take all of the off ice stuff away from it. He's only played like 33 games in the last two seasons. Is that what it is? 33? Whatever the case may be.
It's in the 30s. I don't have it up in front of me, but it's in the 30s.
33, yeah. Played 33 games and then 35 pro games if you count in the two games of the Wranglers.
Right.
So he's played essentially a third of a season over the course of 2 years. You don't know what he is. I don't think if you're the Flames with where you're going, committing 4 years, and this is straight hockey, I don't think committing 4 years or beyond two makes much sense for where they're trying to go here. I mean, they gave Jake Bean 2 years, and Jake Bean is the comparable guy to Oliver Shillington. I believe that was one of their contingency plans. If Shillington didn't work out, like to this point it hasn't, they went out and they signed Jake Bean to a 2-year deal at a very reasonable cap hit. And so I think the Flames have handled this properly in that you still need to do what's in the best interest of your hockey team.
Right.
We like you. We think there's still something there. But what did Oliver show us in 33 games? Showed us he could still play in this league. Showed us that he's still a hell of a good skater. Showed us he's still got some offensive pop. But did he prove to us in those 33 games that he was back to the level he was when he spent that season with Tanev, when he had his breakout season? No, he didn't. And that's fine. That's why you put a reasonable and not term deal on the table to see what it plays out and how it plays out.
Well, and I want to be on the record, and I think you and I have both said this, but I want to repeat this. I also don't criticize Oliver for the way he's approached free agency. I don't criticize a guy who's never been an unrestricted free agent for trying to figure out where he could find the deal that would give him the most long-term security, that would potentially put the most money in his bank account. We're talking about a job that guys have for a limited amount of time, and you're only a free agent a few times in your career. And so I don't criticize Oliver for the way he's approached it. I know some out there suggest he, and I want to use quotes on this, he owed the Flames something. I don't see it that way. I certainly know that the support he received from the Flames organization meant a lot to him. And yet, this maybe brings us back to our point. Like, yeah, I don't fault the Flames for their approach whatsoever. I don't fault Oliver for his approach. And yet, on July 10th, if one still could use another left-handed defenseman and the other could still use a contract, why couldn't there be a reunion? Why wouldn't it work? And I suppose a bigger question I'm asking is, why hasn't it happened yet? And that leads me to believe it's not going to. I wouldn't rule it out, but it's just if we're not here yet, I don't know why not.
Yeah, and I wonder, and this is where I don't know, but I wonder if when the Flames didn't, on the Shillington side, didn't match or didn't go up from what they had on the table, which is probably what happened here, I wonder if that, you know, that's where the hurt feelings began or that might make it more difficult to come back. That's more speculation than anything like that. I don't know that for certain, but doesn't seem far-fetched that, you know, deal, you feel you have a deal before it falls through. Flames aren't willing to, you know, kind of respond to that quote unquote leverage. Then the deal falls through, but there's some frustration or hurt feelings. Yeah. I mean, do I think the Shillington camp is doing anything wrong? No. Do I think that they have maybe missed an opportunity? Potentially. Because I do think Shillington coming back on a 2-year or a 1-year deal with the Flames, having the season that he expects of himself, then you enter a situation where maybe you do get that contract with the Flames when it's time to re-up. And I think there might have been the missed opportunity from the Shillington camp. So do I feel like in pro sports he owed the Flames anything? Black and white, cut and dried, no, I don't. But do I understand fans being like, WTF, why is this happening? I do understand why Flames fans are a little frustrated at the Shillington camp. I do understand why Flames fans are feeling like, well, you said you're grateful. Why hasn't something happened yet? And I fully get that. And I wonder now at this point, with Ball, with Bean, with everything that's transpired, does it even make sense for there to be a reunion going forward? I don't know. It makes a whole lot less sense on July 9th than it did on June 30th, right?
Yeah, I suppose. And yet with the way that Oliver's skill set fits the modern NHL, you know, the type of puck mover he is, the type of skating ability he has, the type of just athlete he is, I think you're always going to make room for that. Whether that's a guy that plays every night, as you said, Oliver, and we're just talking hockey here, Oliver has some things to prove in terms of, you know, when he was a top four defenseman toward the end of the season, there were some nights that it looked like, yeah, this is a top four guy. And there were some other nights that you would not have walked out of the rink thinking, that's a guy who can be a fixture in the top four next season. And so there are some things, again, I can't stress it enough, we're just talking hockey. There's some things that he has to prove there. But with his skill set, and we're talking about a team that doesn't know what some of the midterm fits on the blue line are, it would still make sense to me to add him to that roster. Is that going to give you maybe an overage of bodies on your blue line? Sure. But, you know, is Joel Hanley a part of the future of this team? No. Can he be a decent stopgap option for a couple of years? Sure. But Joel Hanley is not part of what you foresee the future of your hockey team. And so you're not saying no to Oliver Shillington because, we got Hanley now as our, you know, we got Hanley, he's a lefty too. And so, we don't, like, you're not saying that. And so that's the part that I'm struggling to wrap my head around, is like, okay, you probably could use another left-handed defenseman who fits this profile. You need a contract. Am I the only one who sees the potential fit here? But it's those, you know, it's those hurt feelings. It's those ruffled feathers. There's some significant frustration on both sides of this.
Yep. Yeah, it's really too bad it's gotten to this point. Like,
yeah,
more than anything else, it's just disappointing that we are where we are.
Yeah, it hasn't played out the way I anticipated it.
Me neither.
Yeah.
When I listened to the Professional Hockey Writers Association group in Calgary, which of course you're the chapter chair of, when I listened to y'all interview Oliver that day at Winsport, when he got named the Masterton nominee for the Flames, and obviously
right.
he was one of the finalists for the Masterton this year, I came away from that saying, oh, it's just a matter of time until something gets done here. And that was what, in April? Late March, early April, whenever that was?
Yeah.
And here we are in mid-July almost.
Yeah.
In the middle of stampede. I really am stunned it's gotten here, and I'm not disappointed in anybody. I reiterate, I really think Craig Conroy has handled this the
yeah.
right way.
There were some murmurs in March that it could get done any day.
Yeah. It sounded like it was close.
Yeah. Just like there were some murmurs in September and then
Hanifin, yeah.
in November that Hanifin could get done any day.
Yep.
But I shouldn't even bring Hanifin into this conversation because we're talking two very different circumstances. And yet, yeah, like it was at the point where we thought we might be writing the stories or having an emergency edition of Flames Talk to talk about an extension for Oliver Shillington.
Yep.
It seemed like it was that close.
It seemed inevitable. Yeah, it really did.
Yeah.
The last thing I will say to wrap up the conversation on my part, at no point do I think the Flames should have handled themselves any differently. Even had Brad Treliving and or Craig Conroy known at the future and could foresee exactly this happening and knowing that it was going to go exactly the way it has, I don't think that they should have changed a single thing. The fact that they stuck by Oliver and supported him and were there for him in an extremely difficult time in his life, I think that they handled this 10 out of 10 the right way and should do the exact same thing if they had the chance to relive it 100 times out of 100. And I just think that they, regardless of where we are on July 10th, when they started this process in September of 2022, I think that they've done everything right the entire way. And I just think that's really important. It's just a great standard to set in pro sports, a great standard to set when it comes to supporting somebody going through something difficult. That doesn't change. Despite where we are right now, the support from Craig Conroy and Brad Treliving and Matt Brown and everybody else who was so, Michael Backlund and Rasmus Anderson, everybody else who was so helpful to Oliver as he was dealing with everything he was dealing with, that stuff should never have been changed. And so I still think that they deserve a huge check mark. And it really was a great example of how to handle a really difficult, delicate situation
yeah.
in the year 2024, 2022, 23.
Yeah, you're not going to hear any criticisms from me there either.
It's Pat and Wes along with you this hour on Flames Talk underway, and we're coming at you this hour from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, this hour rolls on a Wednesday as we move towards our final shows of the season before our summer hiatus. Been doing lots of big picture talk about the Flames, and this gentleman has been our Pacific Division insider all season long. So time to talk a little big picture with the Pacific Division as well. You know, last week with Jonathan Davis from NHL Network, who joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Last week, we kind of went through the free agency moves and all of what was done in free agency by some of these teams. Now, an opportunity to look ahead to next season and wrap up the seasons that were for the seven other teams in the Pacific. Hello, JD. How are we doing?
Oh, Pat, we are doing fantastic.
That is what I like to hear. Hopefully, hopefully you're having yourself a wonderful summer in Southern California. You know, it's funny. And you take a look at the Pacific Division, and all of a sudden, with what Vancouver did this year, with what Edmonton did this year, with what we know Vegas is all about, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I know Los Angeles made the playoffs this year as well. Seattle is a team that feels like they should be able to get back there. I don't know. Does it feel to you like the Pacific Division might be perceived as a stronger group this year than maybe they have been the last few years?
No, I don't think so.
Interesting.
To be honest with you. No, I think they were stronger maybe 2 years ago than they are now. I don't know what to make of I know what to make of LA, or I'm sorry, I know what to make of Edmonton. I know what to make of Vegas. I'm not sure what to make of the LA Kings. I think that they are kind of like a team that's trying to find pieces to fit a puzzle. And I think that, you know, coming into next season, the big question for LA is that can Quentin Byfield play center? I mean, that's really this is his position now. And I'm not saying that he can't. I'm just saying that that's a question mark for the LA Kings. So I think, you know, they're still trying to figure out who's playing with who next year. So from their standpoint, I don't know what to make of LA. I think that I like, you know, the additions that the Kraken made. I think they will be better. I am not, you know, to be shocked that they regressed. I don't think it's a big shock that they took a step back. You know, they have so many guys that maybe were playing above their pay grade. And so, but I don't know. I mean, look, Calgary is a team that's going through transition. Anaheim is still, you know, a year away from being a year away. And San Jose, you know, I think they'll be better than they were last year, but it's a very low bar to set. So yeah. I don't know. I don't think the division's necessarily better than it's been. That's kind of where I sit, you know, as we're talking here on, you know, July 50th or whatever day.
July 10th, close enough.
Okay. Sorry.
Maybe we'll start with the teams that finished lower or lowest in the standings. How much with Will Smith ready to make his jump to the NHL, with Macklin Celebrini presumably being a full-time NHLer this year, how much better do we see the San Jose Sharks being? They didn't even get to 20 wins last year. How much better do we see San Jose this year? Or are we still talking about a team that is kind of right in the same conversation?
I think that they are. I think they're better than 20 wins because I think they added guys, more NHL players to this roster than they had last year. Now, granted, they did trade away some of their, you know, they traded away Hurdle. They've lost Meyer, and so they've given guys up. But I think they're better, and I think that. But just 20 wins, you know, just 25. You know, maybe it's 25 wins. Like, I think, you know, maybe they're 10 points better in some fashion. But I don't think it's significantly better. I mean, it's a lot to ask of, you know, Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith, two talented players. You know, take a look at, you know, you have to look at what Chicago, you know, did with Connor Bedard and how they, you know, try to insulate him with more NHL players. And the Blackhawks, I think, were better than we thought. And Bedard had, you know, obviously, was rookie of the year, although I'd still contest that Brock Faber had a better year than Connor Bedard. But
fair.
Neither here nor
there. Fair.
You know, but so I think that they're better. Look, I think that they're better. I think, you know, so what San Jose does is that, you know, will they now take away some points from teams, you know, in the division? I mean, I think they're 10 points better than they were last year, but not getting too excited about them quite yet. I'm looking forward to watching both players play, but you know, it's still a last place team.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, if you remember, it took time for the McDavid Oilers to not be really bad. It took time for the Crosby Penguins to not be really bad. Didn't take a lot of time, but it wasn't instantaneous that first season. Obviously, as you mentioned with Bedard, it didn't happen the first year in Chicago. It takes time. It takes time for those players to be ready to elevate the players around them, and it takes time to truly elevate them to that level. And it takes time to build the right people around them, right? So it is a process.
It is. And look, you know, let's take it, like, I look at, you know, you take a look at both Edmonton and Vegas, and you can see the path that they're on. And look, I mean, Vegas is still in a really good situation. Still, you know, their draft capital is non-existent, but we do see where they're going. And I mean, I like what Vegas has done to supplement the guys they lost on their roster. I mean, you know, Victor Olofsson, you know, scored 30 goals a couple of years ago. You know, that could be, you know, it's not going to replace Jonathan Marchessault inside the room, but maybe it replaces, you know, a good part of his production when you're looking to see where they're going to get 40 goals from. What Edmonton did to be able to keep everybody and then to add Arvidsson and Skinner, I don't really see much of, you know, this team tailing off. But when you look at the plan, you talk about plan, and that's why, you know, when I look at what's happened here in Los Angeles, you know, we're still trying to figure out. I mean, look, Andre Kopitar, you can see, was kind of – the age was starting to seep through towards the end last year. And, you know, and like I said, we're adding Tanner, you know, they add Tanner Jeannot, and they, you know, you're hoping, if you're LA, that he can be the guy mm-hmm. that he was 2 years ago. And Warren Fogel, a nice piece, but where does he fit in? And another guy that this team relied on, Alex LaFerriere, you know, not a lot of production, but this is a guy that could easily slot himself into playing on the top line, which may not be a really good thing. But, you know, he's a guy that for L.A. he has to clear waivers this year. And, like, so I don't know what happens with this L.A. team. And maybe that allows another team to jump in. Maybe it allows five teams from Central. It's going to be interesting when you're looking forward. Like, the one thing that, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, Pat, but, you know, on average, we get, what, like five new playoff teams every year. So I'm expecting somebody who didn't make it in the West, like which team drops out this year and which team slots in? That's what I'm still trying to, you know, as we're looking forward, that's where I'm starting to look at. Because I know it's going to happen. There's going to be at least one team.
JD, I get the sense that you feel like it might be Los Angeles is the team that drops out.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me because I still think it's Edmonton, Vancouver and Vegas are the top three. So I really think they're going to be fighting for a wild card spot this year. Now, you know, and, you know, are they fighting with Nashville? Are they fighting with St. Louis? Look, if I was to make a bet, like I mentioned, to see what the odds are for the Kings not to make the playoffs, I would consider it.
Yeah. Of the Pacific Division teams, then, any of them that jump off the page to you is the team that could jump up? Like, would it be Seattle for you that would be the best odds of jumping back in if L.A. were to fall out?
I still think they need more scoring, Pat. I mean, I still think that they – I don't know if they still have enough. You know, that's the big thing. But – yeah, I mean, they play a style that doesn't beat themselves on most nights. They just, if they can find a way to score, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Dan Bylsma. I mean, you know, give this guy credit who took this, you know, took their AHL team to the, you know, the Calder Cup Finals back to back years. But, you know, this guy, you know, hasn't been by an NHL bench for a while. It'll be interesting. He knows that he knows that organization quite well. So, and I'm all in for giving people second chances. And this is, I know it's his third stint by the NHL bench, but I mean, it's been a while. Like, this is a guy that fell off the face. So, yeah, I think that Seattle, sure, will be a team that makes life miserable. Look, I think that, you know, Utah. Throw a dollar into the fine jar for me there. You know, I mean, I think they're going to be better. I do wonder what does happen in Los Angeles. Right now, if I was to pick a team to fall out, it would be the LA Kings.
Okay. We're talking to Jonathan Davis, our Pacific Division insider, wrapping up the year and looking ahead to next year inside the Pacific. Anaheim has had back-to-back seasons under 60 points, 58 points, and then this past season, 1 point better, 59. How close are the Ducks to taking a step here? You know, they go and the Beckett-Senecky pick this year was really interesting and almost universally loved by a lot of draft experts. They've been able to stockpile some really nice young players, starting with Leo Carlson. But are the Ducks on the verge of taking a step, or is that still a little ways away for you?
I think there's still one more year. I mean, they're trying to add more NHL pieces. They got Robbie Fabry. You've got Strome here. You've still got, you know, you've got Kalorn and Gudas with, you know, good years here in Anaheim. You know, look, the big question for the Anaheim Ducks coming into this year will be, will both Trevor Zegras and John Gibson be in a Ducks uniform when the season starts? And, you know, I would tend to say one of them will be gone. I mean, the big thing for Pat Verbeek, from, you know, my understanding is that he doesn't want to retain salary on John Gibson. I don't know how he moves him otherwise. And I just think that, you know, they have to make up their mind on Zegras, because I think that there's still some maturity growing pains that are happening there. But I mean, he's young. Like, I don't know. I just don't think he'd give up. Like, you just signed this guy to a, you know, to the extension. Like, I don't know. Do you want to cut your losses? I don't think that you need to cut your losses yet. I think that this guy can score. And I just think that, you know, he just needs, I don't know, we've talked about it before. Think about what we were like at, you know, 18, 19, 20.
Very, I know what I was like. No, teams, if I had talent, skill, any ability physically at all to do anything, the teams would have wanted me out of there without, like, I would have been instantly on the trade block.
Right. So, but I just think, you know, now look, it wasn't Pat Verbeek's draft pick. I get it. But there's a lot of skill there. And so it's a matter of, can you find a way to get this guy, you know, to just become a pro? And that's really what it comes down to. Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's gone. Like I said, I think they are set on moving away from either him or Gibson. And Gibson makes more sense just from the standpoint that, you know, they've got Lucas Dostal, who is the goalie of the future. You know, there are teams that would love to improve their goaltending situation. I think that if they could get John Gibson at, you know, 60 or 70%, you know, of what his salary is, you know, I think there could be a deal in place at 60%, let's say. Let's say it's $4 million and not six.
Yeah. Last question.
Which is really, I think, 66 and two-thirds.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't want to.
Last question for you, because I'm with you. I'm with you. Vancouver, Edmonton, Vegas are the for sures for me. I know Vegas, you know, had to get in as a wild card and went out in the first round this year, but I still think Vegas, Edmonton, Vancouver are your three for sures in the Pacific.
I mean, look at Vegas down the middle. I mean, Carlson, Eichel, and Hurdle.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, even with saying goodbye to Chandler Stephenson, they're still in really good shape. They don't make the Hurdle acquisition if they're not prepared to walk away from Stephenson, right?
100%. I think, you know, the Marchessault thing to me I don't get. Like, I don't get why they why that couldn't work. You know, you depending on, you know, you get there's three different stories. There's the Marchessault story. There's the Kelly McCrimmon side of it, and then there's the truth. And you know, I just can't believe that they couldn't make it work with the guy that you know leads this team in every possible category offensively, and you know, just a big part of that room. That was a disappointment, but we'll see. You know, maybe it's a shakeup that this team needs. I'll tell you though, Pat, the other thing is, man, Bruce Cassidy can grind on players. I just, you know, it's going to be an interesting year.
Last one. Of those three, who's the number one regular season team this year? Edmonton, Vancouver, or Vegas? Is it as simple as just saying the Oilers?
Yeah, I guess, but see, I think after what Edmonton went through and what Vegas has been through, I don't think either of them care. Like, the key for me, I think for Edmonton, it's just realizing you don't want to go through any prolonged losing streaks. I mean, nobody does, but they, you know, I think that, I don't think it matters to them. If it happens, great. But I don't think that, I think after it's such a grind that they went through. I would, if I had to bet on a team, yeah, I would probably bet. I would bet on the Oilers because I think Vegas may even try more load management type things with that roster. Wouldn't surprise me. So, you know, I would say Edmonton won and Vancouver, I mean, who was in that spot for a good part of, you know, last season, why not? Why not? I mean, but I think what we've learned is that it doesn't matter. Like, because at the end of the day, what are you playing for? Like, really, home ice at the end, Pat? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, and I say that because the numbers bear it out. But it's, you know, the point that fans have to remember about why it doesn't matter is that both teams are on the same schedule when you're playing in a playoff series. No one's coming off three games at four nights on the road, or no one's playing you've got a six game road trip and you're heading into the opponent's building. So home ice, to me, it doesn't matter. Teams can figure out the matchups, you can sort out. You can get away from them. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I don't think it matters. So we'll see how it plays out, but I don't know. Like, for football is the one sport, or football, hockey is the one sport that I wouldn't want to bet necessarily on who wins a division. Because I think that for the most, you know, I'll tell you, the only team I would bet on to win a division right now is New Jersey.
I like it. Value and.
Pardon?
With the value that you'll probably get on top of it being a good pick.
Well, a lot of that value is gone, I will say. It was really good. It was really good the prior morning of July 1.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I got New Jersey at 40-1 to 22-1 to win the cup. And then within hours, it got that number cut in half. So, you know, I'm guessing, like, for them to win the division, it's probably around, you know, a little around 2-1 or so. But, like, to me, like, that's the one team. Because I just think that the Rangers, keep Rangers fans, remember, Peter Laviolette in year two, his teams always take a step back. And I think Carolina's taken a step back. I don't know. I think New Jersey's much closer to that team 2 years ago than they are the team that we saw last year.
Have a good summer, JD. A pleasure all year long. And thanks for being with us and spinning us around the Pacific Division all season. Hey, my friend.
Oh, always a pleasure, Pat. Hey, if you ever make it down here, come on, man. If I could FaceTime you, you'd really hate me right now. But you would never leave if you were down here right now. I'm telling you. Like, I'm at the beach. It's something special.
I believe you. I believe you. Bye, JD. Have a great summer, buddy.
All right, bud. Take care.
Jonathan Davis of NHL Network. He's our Pacific Division insider. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Hey, celebrate the summer soccer spectacle from around the world and cheer on your favorite country on the big screens at Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson starting to wrap things up this hour. Thanks to Shan, thanks to Cam, thanks to Zach for producing this hour for us as well. And that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. When it comes to your business, knowing your property's secure is better than wondering who's getting in. Get peace of mind at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.